Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 96. Tadevam sarva shastranam samandayas tasmineva bhagavati. And so the overall purport of all the scriptures is found in him alone, the personality of Godhead. Tatacha sarvaischa vedai paramohi devo jigyasyo nanyo vedai prasidyet tasmad enam sarva vedana ditya vicharyam cha jagyatu ichin mumukshu. We have statements to this effect in the following scriptures, statements to the effect that the anvaya, samanvaya, the overall purport of all the scriptures, refers to the personality of Godhead. In the Chatur Veda Shika Upanishad, it is said, one should want to know only the Supreme Lord by studying all the Vedas. No one else is established by the Vedas. Therefore, a person who desires liberation should study all the Vedas to ascertain and understand him. Iti chatur veda shikayam yam sarve deva namanti mumukshavo pramavadinascha iti shri nrsimha tapanyam. In the Nrsimha, Sri Nrsimha Tapani Upanishad, he to whom bow down all the demigods, together with all seekers of liberation and students of the Absolute Truth. Da Veda Vin Manutetam vihantam sarvanubhutam atmanam samparaye tam, and then also tam tva upanishadam purusham pritchami ityadir anyatra shrutau. Let's see. In other shrutis, that being whom all the Vedas declare, whom all prescriptions for austere penances describe. And the statement, one who does not know the Vedas cannot, at the time of leaving his body, properly think about him, the Supreme Soul present in all living beings. And also the statement, I am asking about that Supreme Person known from the Upanishads. And in the Sri Gita Upanishad, the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Vedaischa sarvair ahameva vedyo vedanta krid veda vide vacham iti Sri Gita Upanishadsu. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta and I am the knower of the Vedas. Siddhante punareka eva bhagavan vishnu samastagama vyapareshu vivechana vyatikaram niteshu nishchiyate iti patve. In the Padma Purana, when the final conclusion is drawn, when all arguments of the Agama scriptures have been summed up. Again, it is the personality of Vishnu alone who is ascertained. Sarva nama vidyas cha sarva vedetas cha saha iti skante. In the Skanda Purana, he is referred to by all names and worshipped by all the Vedas. Natasma sarva vajasam Pratishta yat vashashvati iti Vaishnave. In the Vishnu Purana, we bow down to him in whom everything expressed by words has its eternal foundation. Sarvavedan sa itihasan sa puranan sa yuktikan sa pancharatran vigyaya Vishnur Gyeyo Nachanyata Iti Brahma Tarke. And in the Brahma Tarka, one who has actually realized the teaching of all the Vedas, all the epic histories, all the Puranas with their reasoned presentations, and all the Pancharatras, should recognize Vishnu, not anything else.
So here we have many Shrutis and Smritis all saying the same thing, that all the Vedas describe the Supreme Lord, and that the purpose of studying the Vedas is to realize him. There's no commentary here, not for this one paragraph. The next paragraph gives Jiva Goswami's own. No, he continues, he quotes a few other things. Tadevam sarvaveda samanvayam swasmin eva tribhagavati iti eva swayamaha. And so the personality of Godhead himself says that the overall purport of all the Vedas is found in him alone. So in his own words, ma vidate pitate mam vikalpya pohyate hyaham. The Vedas enjoin me and describe me. It is I only who am conjectured and refuted. Now, in other words, Mam eva yajna purusham vidate shrutihi. Mam eva tatta devata rupam abhidante. The shruti enjoins that I alone am the Lord of Sacrifice, and designates me alone as comprising all the various deities. And yat chakashadi prapanchajatam tasmad vaetasmad atmana akashat sambuddha ityadina vikalpya pohyate tadap yahameva namantak pritad asti saravasya manatmakatvat iti bhava. Sri Bhagavan, and all the creations of the material world, beginning with the element ether, which are conjectured about and refuted in such statements as, from this very self was generated the ether. That's from Taittiriya Upanishad. These also are myself. They are not separate from me, because everything is of my substance. This verse, Bhagavatam 11:21-43, was spoken by the personality of Godhead, by Krishna to Uddhava. Okay, commentary. The term samanvaya, as used by Bhadarayana Vyas in the Vedanta Sutras, indicates the shared reference of all the Upanishads. Shared reference, that means various words all refer to the same thing, or various statements in different scriptures all refer to the same thing, shared reference. Of all the Upanishads, to the same one absolute truth, Brahman. Shastra yoni twat, the sutra says, it is known that Brahman is the source of everything because he can be understood from the revealed scriptures. Tattu samanvayat, and that understanding is possible by the principle of coherency of reference, samanvaya, or words referring to the same one thing. Okay. Any comments on that, Uddhacharya? Yeah.
Кроме того, он сказал, что the way he should do with me, he quotes first his game quotation from Shrutis, then Upanishads, then from...
No, Shruti, the Upanishads are the Shrutis.
Yeah. This Chaturveda Shikshayam.
That's also part of the Upanishads.
Yeah, okay. So then Upanishads, then Bhagavad Gita, as Gita Upanishad, and then the Puranas, so is this the commonly accepted way to first quote Shrutis?
Yes, it's general practice to quote Shrutis as primary authority. They are more unquestionably accepted as authority. Shrutis, there may be some controversy, and they're considered of secondary authority. Just by the definition of Shruti and Smriti, Shrutis have more heavier authority. And he quotes Bhagavatam. He saves the best for last, so he quotes Bhagavatam last. Especially since we're trying to corroborate what the Bhagavatam says, so it's a little, you know, it may seem a little funny to quote the Bhagavatam to prove the Bhagavatam, so he quotes it last.
And also, in all these descriptions, like we have this real pronounced yam or yad, yad, and so on, and tad. So it's in Upanishads. So can we understand that at some point of the Upanishads it was described that tad, it refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then they just quoted the yad, tad?
Well, these verses are taken out of context in the chapters of the Upanishads that are being quoted from. They're describing about something. It may be under the heading of Brahman rather than Bhagavan. And, okay, let's see. I mean, these statements should not be about just Brahman, they should be about Bhagavan. The whole idea is not that all the Vedas are about Brahman, but that they're about Bhagavan. Well, yam is masculine. In the Chaturveda Shika quote, it's got a masculine pronoun, yam. The Nishinga Tapani is definitely a Vaishnava Upanishad, so I'm sure it's talking about Lord Nrsimhadeva and Lord Vishnu. This fourth quote, I don't think I have a reference for it, but it also has masculine form, Tam Brihantam. Brihantam is an adjective. It's potentially masculine here. And then the last quote from the Shruti is Tam Twap Upanishadam Purusham, and it uses the word Purusha. Yeah. So if we look at the context of each of these statements, it's obvious we're talking about personal form.
His question about refers to Bhagavan, but the Upanishad language is, they use Brahman for Bhagavan also. Absolute truth is called as Brahman, like Atata or Brahman. You said that's
no, they don't language. Really. The Upanishads avoid talking specifically about Bhagavan, often, but not always.
We take that Brahman as Bhagavan.
But we want to make the point that the Supreme as a person is glorified throughout the Vedas. We want to make a stronger point just in saying that the absolute truth is glorified throughout the Vedas. The Upanishads are talking about Brahman, that's obvious. What we're trying to say is that when they're talking about Brahman, it really means Bhagavan. And then we're not going to prove that just by saying Brahman is the same as Bhagavan. We want to say that actually the personality is described. So, because that's a stronger point to make.
So, what is validity of this question?
Well, he was asking, you know, if you look at these Upanishads, are they talking about, you know, is the pronoun used in such a way as to refer to Bhagavan, not just to impersonal Brahman? And in these particular verses that were quoted, yes, I could see. We'd have to look at the actual Upanishads. But as far as I know, each one of these four quotes of the Upanishads is from a context that's describing the personality, not just Brahman. And the Upanishads are not monolithic. They're parts of the Upanishads that do describe the personality of God. There is description of devotional service, but sort of mixed jnana mishra bhakti, but it's bhakti. And there is personal description of the Supreme in the Upanishads, although it may be not the most prominent thing in the Upanishad, but it's there. And these quotes are from those parts that do describe the personality. Yeah?
I'm just wondering that how we can really discriminate the Vedantic language, whether this Brahman is refers to...
Well, the Vedantic language, Vedanta is a commentary. Vedanta Sutra is a commentary on the Upanishads. So the Vedantic language is pretty much Upanishad language.
Yeah, but I'm asking this because you are saying that...
But the Vedanta Sutra doesn't talk so much in terms of Bhagavan. It's talking atato brahmagyasa. The stated topic of the Upanishad, of the Vedanta Sutra, is Brahman.
Impersonal?
Generic.
Yeah, so do you understand the generic Brahman?
But then we read the Vaishnav commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. They explain in terms of Bhagavan.
Yeah.
But the actual statements in the Vedanta Sutra don't talk personally.
But
you could argue that the descriptions of qualities must be qualities of a person. That impersonal Brahman can't have qualities, so any description of qualities has to be applied to the person.
So
but the language tends to be to avoid, like, giving him a name or letting him be much of a person.
So from objective point of view, you mean to say that the Brahman doesn't refer to Bhagavan?
It's not really just an objective thing. It's also the difference between Brahman and Bhagavan is largely subjective. It's the viewpoint of the person who's hearing or listening.
Yeah.
And the Upanishads talk in such a language because their audience wants to hear that language. The audience doesn't want to hear too much, something too personal. It's just like you're preaching to somebody and he doesn't understand Krishna, so you talk more generally, in more general terms. So the Upanishads are talking in general terms because the audience isn't ready for anything more specific. It is subjective, it's actually subjective.
Okay.
It has to do with dealing with a particular audience.
So we have to see in every context of the word Brahman, whether it is Bhagavan or as well generic like that?
No, but it's not like Brahman is the only terminology used. Deva, the word Deva is used, Bhagavan, Purusha, you find these words used in the Upanishads.
So
Upanishads talk about particular forms of the Lord, like Nrisingadev, Nrisingatapani, Ramtapani Upanishad, Gopaltapani. These few Upanishads do talk about particular forms of the personality of Godhead. Shvetashvata Upanishad talks about Deva, about Bhagavan. Other Upanishads use the term Purusha sometimes, like Taittiriya Upanishad.
So as far as the word Brahman is concerned, to make others understand that this Brahman refers to person or Brahman effulgence, we have to see the context and accordingly.
Well, to understand that Brahman is really Bhagavan, you're going to have to go to the Vaishnavas and the Vaishnav Shastras. The Vaishnavas can explain the Shrutis and the Vedanta Sutra in such a way that you understand Brahman is Bhagavan. And if you go to the scriptures that teach pure bhakti, or even mixed bhakti, they'll explain to you how the absolute truth is actually Bhagavan.
Mm-hmm.
But you need this special guidance. You need the guidance. You need to be guided by the Vaishnavas and the Vaishnav Shastras to understand that.
Okay. For example, here you are, when you ask you the question, you are like kind of analyzing the yam is masculine, so this must be Bhagavan.
That
like
must.
That's saying,
you know, we have to look at the context.
So
you could use a masculine, you could use masculine pronouns to refer to an inanimate object too,
uh-huh.
if it's grammatically masculine. I'm not saying it's absolute proof, but it shows it's likely.
Yeah.
To see the real proof, we'd have to look at the passages, examine the context.
Yeah. I thought, you know, it is for granted when Vaishnava was like, we are looking at the word Brahman in the Upanishad, that means we just refers to Krishna, the personality, but still we
Well, that's sort of a simplistic way to do it, is just every time Brahman is said, you know, understand that means Krishna. Because that's not the way the Upanishads are really talking. The Upanishads are not describing Krishna's lila. You know, then Brahma, you know, killed the Agasura demon. You know. It doesn't say that. The things it says about Brahma are not things we generally think of. It's not Krishna's lilas. It's just things about Brahma. That he's bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest, this and that. He knows everything. But it's more like Paramatma realization. Because Brahman realization doesn't have any content. Strictly speaking, Brahman realization is empty. But Paramatma realization is about, as we discussed in the morning class, about the Lord in relationship with this material creation. And a lot of things about that are described in the Upanishads. So you can say the Upanishads are largely about Paramatma, not about the Lord and his pleasure pastimes. Creation pastime is described, but not the other pastimes. Okay, we have finished the file. I'm in trouble because I don't have the next file. Maybe you can loan me your computer. I don't have 5:30 in here.
In the meantime, can I ask you one more question?
Yes.
You were talking about the Shrutis and Smrutis, which is stronger. What is your opinion of the Gaudiya Vaishnava specifically? Which one we prefer, the most important Shrutis and...
The Shruti actually has the original authority, but in Kali Yuga we can't understand the Shrutis. The original Vedas have the first authority, Upanishads are second.
Upanishads also Shruti,
yes, Upanishads are Shruti. But the first part of the Shruti are the Samhitas.
Uh-huh.
So the Rig Veda and the other four Vedas have the first authority, and the Upanishads are just a special part of the Vedas to explain the philosophy. So we also accept on theory that that's the first, you know, basic authority. But in Kali Yuga we can't understand them properly. Nobody has proper access to the Vedas, the Shrutis, in Kali Yuga without the support and the guidance of the Itihasas and Puranas, and especially Srimad Bhagavatam. So practically, even though the Vedas are the original and standard authority, without Bhagavatam, we can't understand them. So we're practically getting all our knowledge from the Bhagavatam, the Gita and Bhagavatam. Consistent. The Vedas are the original authority, but we don't have access to them now. And that's the way Krishna talks in the Gita, too. He's not discrediting the Vedas, he's just telling Arjuna, you know, that you just listen to what I say. This is the essence of the Vedas.
Prabhuji, is it
what are we doing? You give me 30?
Is it the Vedas are like, if they are the original authority, they are not so clear like Bhagavatam and others. Are we just giving original authority to
this? It's not like the Vedas are vague or just mumbo jumbo. It's just they're vague to us because we don't have the intelligence to understand them. They're original Vedas, the Vedic Samhitas, are not really meant for human beings to understand. They're addressed to demigods. They're prayers to demigods. Demigods can understand them. The Upanishads are meant for human beings, at least very intelligent ones, to understand. But in Kali Yuga, even that, people, you know, they lose the intelligence to understand the Upanishads. But that's our fault. There's nothing deficient in the scripture. Just that we're too stupid in Kali Yuga to understand them. Does that answer the question?
Sorry, before I want to ask a few more things.
Go ahead.
Probably, but I was just wondering that whatever intelligence.
Yeah?
Intelligent person should have to understand Upanishad. But still, they are not. They don't tell Krishna's pastimes like Bhagavatam or Krishna wrote, you know, the mud part or Krishna.
I know, but we have to have, before we can appreciate Krishna's pastimes properly, we have to have proper sambandh again. We have to understand who Krishna is, what it means to be God. That's why we're reading the Upanishad. We're reading these dharmas to find that out. What it means to be God, and what are the relationship between God and his energies. That we can learn from the Upanishads. So Jiva Goswami, in the Sandarbhas, even though the Sandarbhas are based on Bhagavatam primarily, still he quotes Upanishads a lot. And Prabhupada, really taking after Jiva Goswami and others, quotes the Upanishads a lot in his purports, especially where Jiva Goswami quotes them. So the Upanishads are very useful to get that sambandh again.
But nevertheless, they are not clear like Bhagavatam. We are like.
Well, yeah, they're not clear for us.
So why we should give the higher authority to them? Like, just because of tradition or because it came first? Or like, I'm just wondering, like, what are the reasons?
The source, the original source of all knowledge, is the Vedas. The Bhagavatam has its position as a limb of the Vedic desire tree. It's the fruit of the tree. It's not a separate organism. It's part of the whole organism. It's just primacy is given to the senior. The son may be smarter and more talented and richer than his father, but still, it's the father's pictures on the wall, not the son's. He gets the respect because he's the father. The Vedas are the original. The Bhagavatam is claiming its authority as a representative of the Vedas. That is emphasized in the second canto, especially. So we accept Bhagavatam as the highest authority, and the Bhagavatam tells us that it gets its authority from the Vedas, then if we accept the Bhagavatam, we have to accept that, because the Bhagavatam is telling us that. Just like, well, okay, Bhagavad Gita. Vishibhir Bhagavata Gita, Chandobi Vividai Prita, Brahma Sutra Padai Chaiva, Etamad Vividish. What I'm telling you here in this 13th chapter, which is like the Gyana Kanda of the Bhagavad Gita, 13th to 18th chapter. And in the beginning of the 13th chapter, he says, what I'm going to tell you is not just out of my own head. It's been described in the Shrutis, and that means in the Samhitas, the original Vedas, by various rishis who composed these mantras. In the Chandas, the Vedic meters, and by the Brahma Sutra Padas, by the sutras of the Vedanta. So Krishna is citing as evidence for what he's going to say, as authority for what he's going to say. What he's saying is not just his own opinion, it's based on the authority of the Vedas and the Vedanta Sutra. And there are also, the sixth chapter of the second canto is a paraphrase of the Purusha Sukta to establish the fact that the Bhagavatam is based on the authority of the Rig Veda. And the Bhagavatam is telling us, teaching us, the message of the Vedas. So there's a lot of things in the second canto that are directly connected to the Vedas. Okay, let me copy this file. Is right here. Okay, we can open it up here. Copy. Put it in here, and we're in business. Okay. Starting, why is it the wrong file? It's the wrong font. I'll try searching the whole file. switching. Oh, because this is old. It says Tamo Unicode. Okay, I'll just switch it. Oh, this is an old copy of the file. This won't work. I think we have to stop early. I'll have to get the right file. This is such an old copy of this file, I'm afraid to use it. Because I'll make corrections in here and it, you know, get messed up. Why don't we just stop now? Okay. Tomorrow we'll start. Yes? Yes? No, the thing is, as we're going along, we're making corrections, we're making changes, and I need to be able to record the changes in a safe file. Okay, we just. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay, question.
Because this topic is anyway very difficult for me to get it again. I just a few more things I want to get clarified. So probably when Prabhupada is kind of again and again emphatically saying in many of his purports and places that Vedic literatures means it is Upanishad, Vedas, and like he quotes Madhvacharya's Pedhiram and Chaiva. So here we are putting everything together. It is in the context of Kali Yuga that we don't understand the higher authority, so we need help of them, and they are all together Vedic literatures. I mean to say that like Mayavadis, they discriminate Shrutis are higher authority, Shrutis are not that equal authority. And we also say that the Shrutis should be given more prominent than the Smritis.
We give more prominence practically to the Smritis. The Shrutis are the original authority, but to understand the Shrutis in Kali Yuga, we need to use the Smritis.
So it is only in the context of Kali Yuga,
especially in Kali Yuga. I mean, the purpose of the Puranas and the Itihasas is to explain the Vedas. They're there in all ages, but in Kali Yuga we have no access to the Vedas without them. There will be a small percentage of the population at any time who can properly understand the Vedas. They're very difficult subject matter. Only the most properly educated Brahmins can understand them. For the rest of the people, the Puranas and the Itihasas are explaining the message. That's true in all ages.
That means in the previous, like Satyayuga and Treta Yuga, they cannot relish Krishna's pastimes, right?
Well, if they study the Bhagavatam, they can.
Like these Puranas, like basically came in Kali Yuga, like things like that.
Yeah, Puranas are eternal. The Vedic literature gets mixed up. Parts of it gets lost. Parts of it gets confused, and there's bad interpretation, bad commentaries. But it doesn't say that they disappear altogether. It's not said anywhere that there were no Puranas in other ages.
It's Mahabharata, Ramayana, they were there. Before there are lots of people are many
of them. Well, I don't know if there was any, whether the Mahabharata and Ramayana over the course of ages became completely lost and then revived, or whether they're there in some form, but some corrupted form or partial form. I don't know before 5,000 years ago there was no Mahabharata in the world. Don't know about that.
You say that Puranas are eternal, they are there, but many of that, like Guru Satya Yuga, are they knowing about Krishna Deva and things like that? It seems like if they only have Upanishads, do they know?
No. I don't agree with that. There was a time when there was nothing around but Upanishads. I'm not so sure that the Puranas weren't there in some form. Maybe not so widely distributed, maybe parts were missing, maybe parts were messed up, but I don't read anywhere that the Puranas disappeared altogether.
Okay, second question, even if it is there, at that age also they give prominence to the Shrutis, then to the Smritis?
Yes, the previous ages, Brahminical culture puts emphasis on the Vedas, the Vedic sacrifice, on being Vedic Brahmins rather than Hindu Brahmins. You know, the whole culture, the high class culture was Vedic culture in previous ages.
which really means emphasis on the Vedas, using the Vedas for sacrifice. Large part of ancient education was studying the Vedas. Instead of studying Bhavatam or studying engineering or medicine, intelligent boys would spend years studying the Vedas in previous ages. It was a major part of education. And was considered useful.
So in the present ages, like other sampradayas, they are studying, giving more importance to, or to at least to some extent, they are studying the Vedas.
Yeah, but who is? Very, very small and diminishing number of people are doing it.
Yeah, but
studying the Vedas. You got, you know, hundreds instead of millions, you only have hundreds of people studying. Yeah.
So is it a waste of time, or like from our point of view, what they are doing?
Not a total waste of time, but without accepting the authority of the Bhavatam, you're not going to understand anything. You know, better to be sitting in the Gurukul reciting the Vedas than be smoking cigarettes in the street.
Yeah.
You know, it's better than something, you know, than doing some nonsense. But it's not of much spiritual use. You won't get any spiritual guidance. You won't understand anything spiritually without getting your enlightenment from the Gita and Bhavatam. Even the Mayavadis, they have prasthana trayi, three sources of authority for understanding the philosophy of Vedanta. And that is the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Vedanta Sutras. So Bhagavad Gita is one of the three prime authorities, even for the Mayavadis. Yes?
About Puranas, that I think that was another Shri Yogasvami. He explains that during Brahma Yagya, at one particular point of the sacrifice, there must be decided some portion of Puranas.
Brahma Yagya is not a fire sacrifice. Brahma Yagya is recitation of the Vedas. That's all it is. It's a kind of yagya, but all it is recitation. And so the point is, while reciting Vedas, you also recite Puranas and Itihasas.
So it means that at all the time, Puranas and Itihasas must be existing.
Which
one? It means that at all the time, there were never time that they were existing.
Yeah. In description of how to perform a big sacrifice, a soma sacrifice that takes more than one day, you don't spend 24 hours a day doing the rituals. And it's specified in the Brahmanas or the Shrauta Sutras, the texts that describe how to use the Vedic mantras for a sacrifice. It's specified that in your spare time you should hear Puranas and Itihasas. And this applies to previous ages also. That's what they were doing at Naimisharanya, having a big sacrifice and listening to Puranas in their spare time. But, so that was there millions of years ago, listening to Puranas, you know, during the intermission and the summer sacrifice.
I also have a long-term question. It's about this verse you quoted from Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutra, Buddha Shiva, Vidunamke, Vinyamnita, that I will say it according to the Rishis, to the Vedas, and to Brahma Sutras. But I know that first it was Mahabharata Upanishad, and then only at the very end, Vedanta Sutra. And that's Vedanta Sutra Shambhavada. So it looks like Bhagavad Gita is a part of Mahabharata.
Well, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken first and then later put into the Mahabharata. It existed before Vyasadeva included it in the Mahabharata.
Vedanta Sutra?
No, Bhagavad Gita.
Bhagavad Gita, okay.
Yeah.
Because it was spoken before he started comparing Vedas and Vedas.
Is that true?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Because Vyasadeva appeared before the end of Dwarpa Yuga. So I think he did a large part of his work before the Battle of Kurukshetra. He already done most of it.
So does it mean that Bhagavad Gita is an eternal scripture? Like very special, not as Mahabharata is more or less.
Well, but eternal scripture may in a sense, but
Krishna says, I spoke it to Vivaswan, he spoke it. So it's not necessarily so that Bhagavad Gita is always the same words. You know, in the same basic text may be there, but the words can change. That's the nature of smriti. The words don't always have to be the same. Bhavatam, the words are the same, but we don't hear that about the Gita. That the Gita that Vivaswan spoke to his son Ikshvaku may not have been the same words that Krishna spoke to Arjuna later.
So the question, how we can know that Vedanta Sutra was written before Bhagavad Gita, so that Krishna could quote it?
He refers to it.
Yeah.
But we get, but there are more complications. The Vedanta Sutra itself cites the Karma Mimamsa Sutras. And the Karma Mimamsa Sutras cites the Vedanta Sutra. They quote each other. You know, you get things like that. Shruti's, Upanishads quoting one another back and forth. So you're in a circle. Which one? Neither one can come first. The only answer is they're both eternal. In the case of Bhagavad Gita and Vedanta Sutra, Krishna refers to Vedanta Sutra, but it could have been there was an earlier Vedanta Sutra before Vyasadeva wrote the current one. There is the Vedanta philosophy in every age. There's a Vyasadeva in every age, and a different Vyasadeva, and there's probably a different version of Vedanta philosophy in each age. So there could have been something else called the Brahma Sutras that's not the same Vedanta Sutras that Vyasadeva wrote it. Krishna was referring to before Vyasadeva wrote it. If the Bhagavad Gita was spoken after it, before it, but not necessarily so, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken before. Probably the Bhagavad Gita was spoken after Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra anyway. Okay? Because the Bhagavad Gita was spoken almost at the very end of Krishna's pastimes, whereas Vyasadeva appeared many years before that.
Which
could be
Vedanta Sutra before Bhagavad Gita could be existed?
Probably. It seems likely the Vedanta Sutra as we have it was composed by Vyasadeva before Krishna, before the battlefield of Kurukshetra.
So maybe we have some special category of Vedic literature, like we have Shruti, we have Upanishads, we have Smritis and so on. So the same way there is one category which is supposed to be filled up at some particular point, it's called Vedanta Sutra.
It's strictly speaking not Shruti. It's commentary on Shruti.
Yeah.
But it's written by somebody, so it's Smriti.
So
it has to fit in the Smriti category because it was written by a particular person. It was written by Vyasadeva. So Vedanta Sutra is not Shruti. It's perfect commentary on Shruti.
I mean that there is a special, like a gap in the Vedic literature which is supposed to be filled at some particular point of time, but it's a devil.
Right. But it may not, but we don't know for sure that the version of Vedanta philosophy in every age is called Vedanta Sutra, or that it's Vyasadeva that writes it. It might be some other sage. It doesn't have to be the Vyasa, who's the particular proponent of Vedanta philosophy. In some age, it might be some other sage. We just don't know. I don't know any information on that.
It could be Krishna is quoting the Vedanta Sutra of the previous Yuga.
But it seems like Vedanta Sutra was written before Bhagavad Gita anyway.
Yeah.
So he's quoting the same one, because it was written before Bhagavad Gita.
But if it is in case of after...
He could have been quoting a previous one, but I don't think we have to resort to that.
Previous Kalpa, Vyas comes every Kali Yuga, so he could have quoted previous Kalpa after Vedanta Sutra. So.
Yes. Bhagavad Gita refers to... Bhagavatam refers to the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems like the order might be first Vedanta Sutra, then Bhagavatam, then Gita. Bhagavatam quotes the Gita, not quotes, but refers to the Gita, as if it was something in the past. So it looks like Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra, then he wrote the Bhagavatam, and after both of those, Krishna spoke the Gita, it seems. Yes? Well, but Vyasadeva must have spoken it to disciples, including Janamanjaya, otherwise Janamanjaya wouldn't know it. He must have heard it from Vyasadeva. Not Janamanjaya, Vajrapayana heard it from Vyasadeva, and other disciples may have also. So Vyasadeva spoke it to his disciples. The first public performance of it was in front of King Janamanjaya.
That means after Maharaj Parikshit, so we can say that the Srimad Bhagavatam could be at the same time.
Bhagavatam was spoken by Maharishi before Janamanjaya heard it. But Vyasadeva could have composed it earlier and taught it to his disciples earlier.
Yes. In the first chapter, fourth chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, it is said that Vyasadeva divided Vedas and then he gave it to his disciples. And that he composed the Mahabharata and it was the Vedanta.
Right. Yes, that's true. But Bhagavatam sometimes talks about things that haven't happened yet. Bhagavatam also talks about events that haven't happened yet. Bhagavatam, you can't assume that just because Bhagavatam says, records a certain historical event, that historical event must have happened before the Bhagavatam is spoken. Because Bhagavatam sees into the future also. Okay, yeah, this is the last point here.
Yeah. Western scholars usually distinguish between the Vedic tradition and the Agamic tradition.
And the what tradition?
Agamic.
Agamic, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Nigama and Agama are two different things. Nigama is the Vedas, Agama is... Well, what is the Agama?
Well, they define it in... There are three kinds of Agama, and one is Shaiva Agama, and the other one is Vaishnava Agama, which is the Panchatantra. And the Shatta Agama. So
yeah, well, you can equate Agama with Tantra. Tantra. And the Tantric is methods of worship that are not specifically Vedic. You know, non-Vedic literature for those, especially for those who aren't allowed to study the Vedas. So, and that Pancharatra fits in that category. That's the Vaishnava Agama, it's mostly the Pancharatra. The Shaiva Tantras and other Shaiva Agama is also another sub-branch of Agama.
They were the same? They were done together, or the Agama is coming after?
After which?
Nigama? After the Vedas.
No, Vedas come first.
Come first.
Vedas are eternal. Agamas are also composed at particular times. Okay.
You're telling about Bhagavatam. Is also Shruti, but why we should keep Bhagavatam as subordinate to Vedas? It could be also independent.
Bhagavatam is officially Smriti, officially, but it's eternal. Just like Krishna is officially the son of Nanda Maharaj, son of Vasudev. Okay, and therefore he has the proper way to behave toward his father and mother. Actually, he's the supreme eternal personality of Godhead. It's like that. Bhagavatam is eternal. But it's got a family relationship with the Vedas, and it maintains the etiquette. I will stop. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.